Hello, you are listening to the Modern Web Podcast, where we explore next generation frameworks, standards, and techniques. I'm Tracy Lee at Lady Lee on Twitter, and you can find us online at modern-web.org. Between the friends are all of your friends and you. Today we have Ben Lesh and Kent Dodds. Ben will be interviewing Kent. And Ben, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Ben Lesh. I'm a senior front-end engineer at Netflix, and I'm also the project lead in RxJS 5.
Great. And Kent, we're so excited to have you on the podcast. I know you do. I've seen you do a lot of amazing things with Angular Air and JavaScript Air. Do you want to go ahead and give a quick intro?
Sure. Yeah. I generally go by Kent C. Dodds, just because I'm weird like that. But I host a podcast called JavaScript Air, and maybe we'll talk about that a little bit during the show, but basically it's a live broadcast podcast all about JavaScript and the web platform, and we do it on Hangouts on Air, and it's video and it's live. It goes to YouTube right after, and then I pull it down and get the audio out of it to put it on a podcast. So we just started in December. Our first episode was with Brendan Eich, and so it was totally legit. It was a lot of fun, and so we've got 9 episodes now. That's one of the things that I do for the community.
Awesome. All right. So Kent C. Dodds. What does the C stand for? Is it true that the C stands for chimichanga?
That is not true. It stands for Christopher.
Christopher. Okay. All right. I always wondered because I always see Kent C. Dodds everywhere.
Yeah, people do ask.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. So the other thing I think a lot of people might ask about is you're famous for Angular Air, which is a sort of long running podcast.
That's right. Yeah.
So you've now handed off the reins to Jeff Welpley and Patrick JS. Is that right? So why do you hate Angular now?
Good question. sort of. So, I started doing Angular right around the pre 1.0 days, right before 1.0 was released. So I don't even remember when that was, like 2.5 years ago, something like that. And I used it for a long time and decided to start a podcast called Angular Air, just to give back to the community. So Todd Motto, I always call him Todd Motto. It's Todd Motto. No, it is Motto. Yeah, I'm always confused about his last name. But yeah, Todd Motto. And I started this this Hangout on Air thing, and we thought that it would just be kind of a useful thing for the community. We'd do it every other week or so, and we didn't really think of it as a podcast as much as just kind of a chat thing. But people were asking me for the audio version of our first episode, which was with the Angular team. And so I decided, okay, let's set this up as a podcast. And then it turned into a real big deal. And then Todd got really busy, had some personal stuff. And so I kind of took it over and made a weekly podcast and got a bunch of guests. We did live shows at conferences and stuff like that. And that's kind of the nice thing about having a video podcast that's live is you can do stuff like that, and it just like meshes really well with the format of the podcast. And so I did that for pretty much exactly a year. And around the year mark, I was interviewing with PayPal to change jobs, and I would no longer be doing Angular. And so I was worried that by switching from Angular to React in my day job, I would kind of lose touch with the Angular community and not be able to provide the value that the Angular community needed. And so I decided that I wanted to continue to give back to the community in general. But because I couldn't, you know, do that in the Angular community, I would still be doing JavaScript. So I decided to start JavaScript Air and hand off the reins to Jeff and Patrick on Angular Air. And actually, something interesting about JavaScript Air is it was actually really close to becoming React Air. But what I was going to buy the domain reactair.com. And right at that moment, I decided, you know what, in 2 years, maybe I'll be using React, maybe I won't, but I'll probably be using JavaScript. And I don't want to have to do this change thing again. So I switched to my domain to javascriptair.com, and that's what it is. And I'm glad that I did, because I feel like there's a bigger community that we can serve by, you know, going with something that's more ubiquitous and kind of unifies all of us regardless of framework. And so that's kind of the origin story of JavaScript Air.
Awesome. So are we going to see like a Clojure script Air in the future or?
Maybe. You know, so actually somebody has approached me and asked if they could do a React Air, and I'm totally cool with that. If anybody wants to like go off of and do an Elm Air or something like that, maybe the name doesn't really like roll off the tongue very well. But I don't know. I really, really like the format of JavaScript Air. And so, you know, whatever it is that I'm kind of in context with and whatever community I'm involved with, like, you know, maybe I could just go crazy and switch from JavaScript to Go, like our friend TJ Holloway-Chuck, and we'll make it Go Air. That actually sounds kind of nice. But
so were you at all worried that there would be some sort of backlash towards you? Because, you know, so much of your popularity was built off of the Angular Air podcast. Were you worried that you would do that and all of a sudden you'd move to JavaScript Air and your fan base, as it were, would feel abandoned or turn on you in some way?
Well, this is sort of, I guess, I don't know if I call them a fan base, but you know, people who follow me because I do Angular stuff and you know that's stuff they're interested in. I was worried that people would associate my, you know, switch to JavaScript Air with, you know, kind of what you alluded to at the beginning of me not liking Angular, and that's not true at all. It really is just a matter of time. I think Angular is awesome. I think it's great. I personally like React better, and so I prefer to work with that. Ultimately, I like JavaScript the best, and so that's kind of what I'm going with. But yeah, I was a little bit worried that people would kind of misunderstand my switch, and hopefully they haven't. I haven't really experienced any negativity toward me. I think it's just, you know, we're all working hard to just, you know, scrape by in life. And so I think people understood that it's just kind of a matter of time. The other thing that I was a little bit worried about is I have a whole slew of libraries written for Angular. And I was kind of worried that, you know, because I am no longer doing Angular, I have a blog post on this, actually. It's called Open Source Stamina. And basically the premise is, you contribute best to something that you use regularly. And so because I'm no longer using Angular, I'm out of context with the project. I can lose steam on it because, you know, it's not covering any of my use cases anymore. And so I was worried that those projects would kind of die out. Luckily, my biggest project, Angular Formally, is more or less done. And so, like, people are getting a ton of benefit out of it still. And the community is kind of taking care of support for it for the most part, in the chat and stuff. And so, yeah, I feel pretty good about where that separation happened. And I still care. And so I still participate in conversations and stuff. But for the most part, I'm pretty much just JavaScript and React now and Node.
Well, you know, you do actually, you said you don't think you have fans. You do have a fan base. I believe they're called Dodsonians, is what they call themselves, or Dodsheads.
Dodsheads.
Yeah, we have a meetup every other Sunday. Yeah, I don't think I've heard too much in the way of backlash about Angular Air. Maybe Jeff Cross complaining or something a little bit. That's about it. So JavaScript Air, you've had... Is it two episodes now so far?
No, we've actually had about nine. We just had our ninth episode today.
See, I stopped following after you quit Angular Air, so that's why I don't know that. Awesome. So, did you have an easier time lining up speakers in this podcast? Like, if you compared starting this podcast to starting, you know, say Angular Air, besides experience, do you think that your exposure has made it easier to get speakers onto your show?
Yeah, good question. So JavaScript in general has, like, it's a much wider range of topics you can cover. Like, I can now cover all of Angular and all of React and all of, you know, the web platform in general. And so it's a lot easier to come up with topics. The real challenge now, and with Angular, it was never really a challenge to come up with topics. But it's a lot easier. And the real challenge now is like, how do I identify the things that will be most beneficial to the community and most interesting to everybody, you know, viewing and watching. That's been a little bit of a challenge. We have a place where you can suggest topics and guests, and that just is filling up a lot faster than we can have shows, I'm afraid. And so, yeah, that it has been a lot easier to come up with topics, and the trajectory of the podcast is looking really, really good. It's really taken off. So I'm really excited about it.
Cool. Cool. Well, I want to switch gears here for a minute. Now I talked with you beforehand and to get some information about you that I could use against you during this podcast. you've only been developing web software for 3 years. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Something like that. I kind of don't really count my first exposure to it in college, because it was like a couple classes and then I took a couple years break. But yeah, so pretty much only been developing software for money for about 3 years.
Developing software for money. That makes it sound so dirty. So 3 years, I mean, that's a pretty junior amount of time to be developing software, wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah. So it's really impressive how successful you've been. How much of that do you think has been your podcast, or has there been mentorship in your career that's helped you out, or are you just a genius?
Yeah, certainly not just a genius. So I think the like top reason for you know, where I am, wherever that is, in the software development world, is an immense amount of privilege. I was raised in a really strong home. I went to a great school, and I learned a lot from my family and from you know, my just education in school. And then I got married to a wife who was crazy supportive of me learning as much as I can and developing my skills as a developer. And so, yeah, just a huge amount of privilege. And then along with that is I just worked really, really hard to learn as much as I can. And I kind of jumped on the right train with Angular at the time that I did. And then, the other thing was, I think, like, you know, just kind of to take a sort of a tangent on the subject of learning, I think that there are a couple steps in the learning process. And first, it's like you learn however works best for you. So if that's a video or a blog post or a tutorial or something or a book, but then everybody needs to ultimately build something to learn it. And then the pinnacle of learning is teaching it. And so I started presenting at meetups. The first meetup I ever went to, I was going because I was presenting. And I was presenting on a library that I wrote that was just like this little funny thing. It's actually still out there, and I think people might be using it. It's called Genie.js, and it's like Alfred or Spotlight for the web. It's actually pretty cool, and I'd like to use it again if I need to find a use case. But anyway, so I was presenting on that library at the first meetup I went to, and then I just started presenting at a lot of meetups. And I presented JOT authentication with Angular at an Angular meetup, and John Lindquist saw that on YouTube, and he asked me to turn that into an Egghead series. And that, I think, was a huge, made a huge, huge impact on my career, was jumping in with Angular doing Egghead. And so once I did that, then that just gave me a ton of exposure. And also, like I said, teaching is the pinnacle of learning. And so I learned a ton of stuff. I have, I think, over 70 lessons on Egghead now. By the time this comes out, it might be like over 80, because I've got a series I'm super excited about that's coming out pretty soon. So yeah, just with all of that teaching comes a ton of learning. And so I think that had a big part of it as well. And then, you know, I started applying to conferences. I send, like, if there's a conference that I want to go speak at, I'll send, you know, 7 proposals. I sent like 8 proposals to ngConf last year. I think a big part of how I've been able to get to wherever I am is because my desire to learn something and then build something with it and then teach what I've learned.
You know, I actually, that strikes a note with me, because one of the things I do to learn things is that, you know, I'll find a topic that I know very little about, and I will set out to do like a blog entry or a video or a talk, a meetup talk or something about it to teach other people, because that makes me feel like I have to learn it more thoroughly. Totally. Because I don't want to give people the wrong information, right? But I, you know, in recent years, because of I've been doing a little bit more high profile things, I've actually kind of stopped doing that, because I'm a little worried about
misdirection,
giving people misinformation, when now I have some minor bit of authority to my name. Now you've got a lot more recognizability to your name. A lot of people know you. A lot of people follow you on Twitter and have seen your videos and Egghead and your podcasts. Do you ever worry about information you're giving out to the masses? Or
yeah, absolutely, I do. Yeah, so actually, like, there have been a couple of times where I've misled, and you know, I comfort myself in knowing that we're all learning, and the web platform, as ubiquitous as it is, it's still really young and we're still learning a ton about it and like best practices. And so like everything that we say is the best way to do things in a year is going to not be true anymore. And that's part of what's exciting about the web. It's also part of what is wrong with the web and what's hard about it. But yeah, like just to give an example, for like one of my series on Egghead.io, I did Angular with Webpack. And in that I said, okay, now here we're going to add Babel. And I started to like, I showed how the module, ES6 modules work. And Babel allowed, in Babel 5 and up until Babel 6, it was allowed to use ES6 modules incorrectly. And so I had been using ES6 modules incorrectly for like 9 months, and I'd even taught it, and I'd given workshops and blog posts about how ES6 modules works and like the best way to do it, or like the right way, you know, or, you know, whatever. Then I upgrade to Babel 6 and I find, oh, my code isn't like working for some reason. And like, it was totally a midlife crisis, like an early midlife crisis for me, because I realized I totally misunderstood how ES6 modules worked, and I taught all these people the wrong way. And so I immediately updated my blog posts and everything that I could, and posted a blog, explaining what I got wrong and explaining the correct way and how I had to go about fixing it. You can find that at kcd.im/tears. Cause it's, there were tears involved on my side, figuratively, but, so I'm totally, nervous to, misdirect people, because yeah, like people do, I don't know why, but people do listen to what I say for some reason. And I actually, tweeted something about, that today, like, don't listen to what I say. I've only been doing this for 3 years.
one of the ways to help with that is, this is probably bad advice, but you do a talk on it at a meetup first, because in a meetup, generally speaking, there's like the one like person that will push up their glasses in the audience and be like, well, actually,
yeah. Yeah.
And then they'll chew your ear off afterwards for 20 minutes. That's definitely something I've struggled with. Have there been any recent things like that where you were a little worried about the content you were giving out?
Yeah, actually. So last night I was, I'm creating a series on Egghead about how to contribute to an open source library, because that's something that I really care about, is open source. And I want to make it easy for beginners. And so I was creating the part of the lesson about how to squash your commits to kind of clean up the commit history for your pull request. And that involved a Git rebase, an interactive rebase. And that's something that I don't do. Like, I think I've only done it once or twice in my life. And so, I was pretty nervous about, giving misinformation or doing it a suboptimal way. And so luckily with Egghead, there are like 100 people that I can ask to have review my lessons and make sure that I'm, you know, instructing in the right way. And so I feel pretty confident about that. But yeah, if you're in a position where you feel like you have some kind of influence, and that people will actually listen to what you say, then you want to make sure that what you're saying is at least sort of correct, or a good way to go about it. Obviously, there are always going to be opinions and always differing opinions, and so like you can't really control that. But at least that what you're recommending and suggesting is, you know, a good way to go about it, and run that by people who know, I think is kind of a good way to go.
Well, to flip that around, so you know, we've been talking about the popularity of your podcast and how we have to be careful of what we say because people might give a little bit too much credence to it. But on the opposite end, was there ever a time early on in your career where, especially in open source, where you were interacting with somebody or contributing to a project, and you interacted with somebody that you found really intimidating?
Absolutely. It's funny. I was thinking about this just like the other day, but like if I'm in a conversation on Twitter with somebody like that, like Brendan Eich, for example, they respond to one of my tweets, I'll do pretty irrational things to make sure that I can respond immediately. So like if I'm with my family, I'll like, I gotta go to the bathroom or something like, just dumb stuff. I really think that we shouldn't hold these people up on a pedestal of any kind like that, but I'm totally guilty of that myself.
You're like fake pooping, but you're really actually tweeting with Brendan Eich.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, basically. that has only happened once, by the way. But I definitely am intimidated by by developers that I really admire and I feel are really smart. I guess that's just kind of the nature of myself and something that I think we should probably just kind of get over because we all. You know, we're all just people trying to scrape by.
Yeah. I had an incident where the first time I ever contributed to Angular, Tobias Bosch said he wanted a video chat. Tobias Bosch said that he wanted to chat with me on Hangouts. And I thought, okay. And so I went and I found a private place in my bedroom, which was totally messy. And I'm sitting there. And then all of a sudden it was a Hangouts video chat. And I freaked out because the room is a disaster. I don't even remember if I was wearing pants. And so I'm freaking out, like looking around, like how can I arrange the room behind me to not look like a disaster? and then I answer it and I'm like looking into Google's office. And, I was living in Pittsburgh at the time. And to me, it was just like, holy cow, I'm looking at the mothership. This is really weird. Someone at Google is video chatting me and everything around me is actually a wreck, but I need to, portray myself as an organized person. So make sure that the 2x2 square foot area behind me is clean ish.
That's awesome. Yeah. I can totally see myself doing something like that. And that's kind of the experience that I have doing JavaScript error is, that I can get, quote unquote important people in the community on the show. And I don't know whether I look like I'm comfortable, but I'm totally nervous. And in fact, I even have panelists on my show that I think are just amazing people. And I'm totally honored to have them as panelists on my show. But like, I get nervous talking to them. And so, yeah, I totally relate.
So let's talk a little bit about ES6. ES6 is slowly invading all major modern browsers. A lot of people use it right now with Babel and to some degree with TypeScript, which is a superset of ES6. Are you excited about ES6? Do you use it a lot? I'm assuming you do because you do React development and generally that's done with Babel these days. Are you super enthused about it? Were you always enthused about it?
Yeah. So let's see. I discovered 6 to 5 just over a year ago. I think that I heard about it in November of 2013. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. I heard that there was, a new version of the language coming pretty soon, new features and stuff. And so it'd be cool to use those. But at the time, the project that I was on was using this crazy gulp thing that I had created that was like thousands of lines long and there's pretty much no chance of me getting transpilation working in there. But then I, in about January 2014, that was November 2014. So in January 2015, I decided, okay, this gulp thing is just not going to work. Like basically my gulp project or my gulp task in development would read my file system and automatically stick script tags into an index.html in the right order. And that, like, because it was an Angular app, so it had to be loaded in, you know, sort of the right order. And so I followed like a convention or whatever. It was just kind of this crazy mess. I decided that wasn't going to scale very well and I wanted something a little bit better. So I tried out Webpack, and it took like a week to rewrite all my stuff to go with require statements rather than just a convention. But it was like amazing. And once I finished that, I realized that I could just like tack on a loader with the Babel loader. At the time it was 6 to 5 loader, and I could start writing ES6, and it was like easy as, you know, as pie. And so once I added that, then like from then on, I just like, I can't write ES5 anymore. I need my features from the latest version. So I'm a stage 2 guy, kind of guy. Anything that's stage 2, I use, and I feel fine to, or I feel free to use. So yeah, I've been using ES6 features and some ES2016 and ESNext features for quite a while now.
What is there a particular feature in ES 2015 that you like a lot, like one that you just couldn't do without?
I think if I had to pick only one, I'd probably pick I can't pick just one. Enhanced object literals is awesome. Like the ability to, you know, if I have a name variable and I want to create an object that uses that name with the key of name, then just sticking name in there rather than name colon name is, I don't know, like it's just, you know, syntactic, sure. It's nothing really actually useful, but and like the rest and spread and default parameters, those are totally legit. I love destructuring. So I guess I couldn't really pick one. Template strings are awesome. Template literals. And I'm a big fan of let and const, prefer const. And yeah, there are a lot of features in this version that I just really like. I wouldn't say that I couldn't do without them, but I'm really glad I have them.
Yeah, let and const and destructuring, especially destructuring because I'm lazy. You know, we do React development and Ember development, but it's switched over to mostly React development at Netflix. And getting everything out of props,
yeah.
It's totally, like, I need destructuring or I'll go insane.
Totally. And like on your stateless functions, on your your stateless components, destructuring that props argument, it looks nice. I don't know. I love it.
You'll have to excuse me for a second. I'm having a child issue. Hold on.
That's just fine.
Say hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
Did you know we're recording a podcast?
Nope.
This is Lincoln right here.
Hi, Lincoln.
Lincoln, can you say JavaScript is awesome?
JavaScript is awesome.
Oh, wow. I agree.
All right. I don't even really remember what we were talking about.
Yeah, I can't either. I think I was just talking about, or we were talking about destructuring and how amazing it is. I think it's time for subject change or something. Do I need to be more exciting? Like, hey there.
Coming at you.
Yeah.
Coming at you.
We're live with JavaScript Air.
All right. We were talking about ES6 features. What about new features, proposals that are coming down the pipe? Are there any you're particularly excited about there?
One thing that people may not know as much right now is that ES2016 is actually a really small release of the language. It's only 2 features. And so it just is adding includes to the array prototype. And so you can say, like, you know, this array includes 2 and get true or false. And then the exponentation operator, which is just like a double times, which is the equivalent of the power, like math.pow. And so that's ES2016. And so the like ES2015 or ES6 was a huge release because it's been years since we've received an update. And there were a lot of things that we really, you know, wanted and needed. And now that we've gotten lots of those things, you know, yearly updates, they need to like take more time to think about the features. And I think that it's a good thing that they're really considering the features a lot. But the future versions have a, like there's a GitHub repo that you can see the current status of different proposals. And some of the proposals I'm kind of excited about are obviously async await, which a lot of people are really excited about and kind of bummed that it didn't make it in ES 2016. But it's just kind of this, you know, syntactic sugar for promises, basically, which is actually something I'm, async await is something I've actually never used. But it looks awesome, and I think it'd be cool to use. And then one other thing that I'm pretty excited about is trailing commas in function parameter lists and calls. So I don't, it's kind of weird, but if like, let's say you have an object literal and you have commas for each property, and on the last property, there is no comma because you're not some crazy person. And so you leave the comma off on the last one.
Just so you know, I'm imagining right now, like Doug Crockford listening to this and like throwing crap across the room. Like,
yeah,
keep going. I'm sorry.
Yep. Yep. That might be happening. He actually works at PayPal. So, yeah, but, so anyway, you got that, no comma on your last property, and then you decide, okay, I'm going to add a property to this object. And so you add a comma on that line above, and then you add another property. Well, in Git, that says you changed two lines, but really you just added a property. And so, I prefer to have, an extra comma at the end of all my object literals and arrays and everything whenever it's multi-line, to avoid that problem with Git reporting I changed two lines when I actually just added a property. And so with trailing commas on function parameter lists and calls, you can basically do the same thing. And so you can add, like if you have multiple lines for your parameter list, then you can add a trailing comma on the last one. And even though there's not another parameter after that, this feature would make that be okay syntax. So I'm excited about that one. I'm really excited about objects rest and spread properties. So like you have rest and spread for arrays. Those are coming to objects, and it's basically just like object.assign, but it's a nice syntax for that. Obviously, like that's I think that's stage 3 right now, and so I'm totally using that right now, and it's awesome. And then another thing that I think is stage 1 is system.global. So in Node, you have the global variable that you can assign things to and have access to that everywhere. Then in the browser, you have window as your global. And so this just makes a nice, is a consistent API for all of JavaScript for what the global variable is. And not that I encourage using globals, I just like having consistency. So those are the couple of the future features I'm excited about.
Yeah, that last one's going to be nice. Have you ever developed a library that was both for Node and for the browser?
Oh, yeah. No, I've actually never developed a library that used the global, aside from like a UMD wrapper, the universal module definition wrapper. Yeah, I know that it's a real pain in the neck if you do need to.
Yeah, usually it's necessary for inspecting to see if certain features are available,
sure,
and then polyfilling them. And yeah, you end up with like this module that's 10 lines or maybe even 20 lines of code that does nothing but try to figure out what type of global you have.
Oh man.
Pretty gross. So I'm excited about that. Now, you didn't say observable.
Oh, that's true. I'm sorry. That actually is in a class of its own, of course. And so I didn't want to put it with all these other lowly features. So
that's right. We're probably just not going to air this show now. But let me ask you: have you used RxJS? Has anybody convinced you to go down that rabbit hole yet with Observable?
Not yet.
Or
Bacon, no.
So, or Ghost or Kafka or any of these?
No. So I have watched all of the CycleJS videos on Egghead that were just released. I have watched. There's another series about RxJS on Egghead. I've watched that whole series as well. So I'm interested in observables, and I think it's really kind of cool to consider these asynchronous things as just arrays. And anytime I look at it, I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. You know, declaring all of your operations in a single place for your data. I think, you know, it kind of brings a nice separation of concerns. It's a really nice and declarative API. One of the things that kind of scares me about it, well, yeah, it all just kind of scares me. I guess it's just because it's such a big API and there's so many things that you can do with it that it's kind of intimidating. And so like, yeah, it looks really awesome, looks really cool, but it's just not something that I've really dug into. And that's actually part of the problem, or not problem, but part of the reality of the web is that there are just so many things. Like, you know, I left off a whole bunch of ES6 features that I haven't even tried yet. Like proxies, you know, like you can't really try that yet. And so, yeah, there's just so many things, and observables is just one of the things that I haven't tried yet.
Sure, sure. I mean, just going through Twitter, it's basically like walking through a carnival where like each booth is shouting to get your attention and
totally
the other booth stinks. Like, you know, come try
in
transducers, observables are horrible. And then there's like, try observables, promises are horrible, you know, and like everything is like that. Like you, what about RxJS versus Redux, which is one of the funnier ones that I get from time to time. But yeah. There is quite a bit of that. You're liable to see some of that on JavaScript there. What are your feelings about that, and how will you handle that? Like trying to maintain some sort of neutrality to promote a learning environment.
One thing that I really, really want for JavaScript there is for it to feel, and actually I feel the same way about all of my open source libraries, is I want it to be a very safe place where people feel like they can be safe, and where their opinions can be heard and their opinions can be, you know, respected for what they are. And so right from the get-go, I created a code of conduct for JavaScript Air, and all of my communication with the guests and the panelists include that we need to make sure we understand and follow that code of conduct. And so, yeah, I don't think that there's a problem with opinions. I think opinions are great. And actually with my panelists, I have, you know, several people who have differing opinions about different things. And that's, you know, kind of that's by design. And so, yeah, I want to have differing opinions. I think that's a good thing. But I also want to make sure that we're respectful of each other's opinions. And one other thing that I think that we kind of miss often when we're building something is like, wow, this is so awesome. I can't believe that like not everybody is doing this already. Is the fact that like we all learn and think differently from each other. Like we're totally different people. And so maybe Angular makes total sense for me, but it doesn't really make sense for this other guy. And that's why he's doing React, and this other girl, like she's doing Ember because that like the way that Ember works and the conventions just makes a lot of sense for her. And so I think we need to be aware of the fact that we're all different and that we think differently, and different solutions cater better to the way that we think. And so that's why I think, you know, aside from just being good people, that's another reason I think that we should be respectful of one another's opinions.
So that's counter to what I've heard, and that is that React has solved the web, that there's no need for any other libraries or frameworks. And that,
no, it's not only solved the web, it's solved mobile and it's solved desktop and it's solved TV. Like React is the end all be all for sure, right?
Right, right. Like the other day I was searching for some esoteric programming, you know, algorithm, and Google came back with, have you tried React? And I just kind of shrugged and went, well, yeah, I think I have, but maybe I'm not reacting right. I don't know.
Yeah, they're going to start putting them in heart in like pacemakers and things like that, just because, you know, it'll just make it so much better.
Right. You the know dev- what this pacemaker needs? Some virtual DOM. That's what it needs.
The dev experience is just too good.
That's right.
React is totally good. Sorry, I just talked about how we should respect each other's opinions, and then I start bashing, but React is totally awesome. I don't think that there will ever be an end all be all anything as far as programming is concerned. So like there won't ever be an end all be all language. JavaScript is not an end all be all language at all. React is not the end all be all framework for JavaScript or library, as whatever you want to call it. it's, you know, it different tools cater for different solutions and problems and different times. And so, you know, maybe React will continue to evolve and continue to solve problems for us. I hope it does, because I think it's great. But if it doesn't, that's fine, because there will be better things that come out. And eventually, you know, computers will start writing our programs for us, and they'll just put a chip in our head, and then, you know, we're good. I'm just joking.
Wait, they haven't done that to you yet?
I don't live in the Bay Area, so it takes a while to get out here to Utah.
That's true. Well, we'll assimilate you soon.
Resistance is futile.
All right.
So one thing that I have started doing that I think is a really good thing is, you know, I worked at a couple places and worked with some really, really smart people, and I'd have conversations with them about stuff, and I learned what a rebase is, or I learned what you know, functional programming is, or whatever. And we would have this conversation, and at the end of it, I just was like, "Wow, this is awesome! I've learned something." But it was just, you know, that developer and me having that conversation, and so I decided that it would be really nice if we could have that conversation recorded somehow, whether it be like, you know, audio form or video or whatever. So that other people could benefit from that conversation that we had. You know, maybe they will, maybe they won't. But it, you know, it's pretty easy to do a record. So I have started doing this thing called that I just call tech chats, where if I have a question for somebody, I will say, you know what, I'd really love to ask you my questions about this. Like, I don't understand what continuous delivery means or continuous integration. Could we have a conversation about that? And if they say, yeah, that's fine. Like, I'm an expert in this or whatever. Then, I say, well, do you mind if we do that on a hangout on air so that, you know, other people can benefit from that experience as well. And most of the time they're fine with that. And so I've had conversations with a lot of people about different subjects, that, you know, just answer my questions basically. And, you can find them at kcd.im/tech-chats. And it's just a playlist on YouTube. I've got like 12 on there, but the whole reason that I say that is I think there are a lot of conversations that you, listener, are having with people that other people could benefit from, even just being a fly on the wall. And so, you know, think about ways that you can take the things that you're doing and contribute those back to the community. And it's just a really easy and, you know, easy way to do that. And so like another thing that I do is anytime I give a workshop or a talk, I try to make sure that the workshop or talk is recorded. And if it's not, then I'll record it myself. And then I put up all my like abstracts and everything for my talks on a GitHub repo. You can go to a shortcut. There's talks.kenseydodds.com. And, it just lists all the talks that I've given, the abstracts, and it has my slides and, my recording. So that, you know, because I'm already giving this talk or I'm already giving this workshop, I may as well, you know, just hit the record button. And then when it's all done, I put it up on YouTube and maybe somebody will benefit. And so just think of the things that you're already doing and think, how could I make this benefit even more people than it already is? And you'd be surprised how easy it is to do that. So that's, I guess, closing idea, something that I'd like to encourage people to do.
I have a question about that. So what about the people that might be listening to this that would say, well, you know, that's great, Kent, but I don't really know how comfortable I feel about being on camera or being recorded. You know, oh, my voice sounds stupid when it's recorded, or, you know, I get nervous, you know, being on stage, or I get nervous in front of a camera. You know, have you ever struggled with that? Or, and if so, you know, what do they do? How do they get past that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So like, just full disclosure, I'm nervous every single time I give a talk or a workshop. And so like before the talk, I'll go into the bathroom or something and do power poses just to kind of make myself feel excited and energized. And
if anybody's poses. What's a power pose like? This is audio, so you have to describe it in great detail.
So it's like you stand in a Superman pose or Superwoman pose, like, you know, like you own the world and you're just super excited to be alive. So like you stand with your chest puffed out and your arms, you know, or your fists on your waist and like, or your hands way up in the air and like doing jazz hands or something. Just in a position where you're kind of asserting your dominance, I guess. Not that you're looking down on anybody else, but just that you feel awesome about yourself. I do that. If you catch me before one of my talks, you might find me sneaking into the bathroom into a stall where I can comfortably do that without other people seeing me. Because
do you like talk to yourself too while you're doing it? Like, you're the man.
You are awesome. Yeah, I should do that. That would be interesting. To more directly answer your question, I think that we are all different people, and I'm, you know, if you've seen me in my talks and stuff, like I do air squats before almost all of my talks and workshops, and even during my workshops sometimes, just because it kind of helps loosen me up and help, you know, it loosens up the crowd as well. It makes them feel comfortable, or maybe uncomfortable. I don't know.
Did you do air squats before this?
I did not, actually.
I'm not even intimidating.
That's yeah. Anyway, so I think we're all different people, and I do get nervous, but I am a pretty outgoing person, and so it's easy for me to get up in front of people. And you know, in my church, even little kids get up in front of, you know, the congregation and give talks. And so I've been giving talks for a really long time, in front of a lot of people that I know don't know very well. And so I've had a lot of practice. I'm just really generally not a super nervous person. And so if you are that kind of person, don't feel bad. Like we're all different people, but don't be totally discouraged. You can, if it's something that you want to do, you can accomplish it. And there are a lot of people who are nervous like you, or just not comfortable being in that position, who have done it. And so if you don't want to, that's fine. You don't have to do this. But if it's something that you're interested in doing, don't give up. Look for material that other people have produced, about like how they get over their conference speaking, nerves or whatever. And, if you think your voice sounds funny, it's okay. just kind of power through it. It's all about kind of giving back to the community, and we're all just trying to do our best to contribute. So just do your best.
Well, Kent C. Dodds, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm really happy that I'm the one that got to interview you. By the way, this is my first interview I've ever done. Since you did a great job. Seasoned pro, could you grade me a little bit? Could you need some sort of scholastic approval?
I think that your sarcasm was excellent, made for an interesting conversation. I feel like this the conversation has gone pretty well.
Can you give a shout out again about your URLs for your tech talks and JavaScript Air?
Yeah, sure. So JavaScript Air is at javascriptair.com. And if you're interested in Angular Air, it's angularair.com. So the tech chats, you can just look up my YouTube channel. Just search Kent C. Dodds YouTube. That's part of the reason that I am particular about the C in my name, is just that it makes me really Googleable. So it's really easy to find me. Kent C. Dodds YouTube, and you'll find my channel. You'll find my playlist there, the tech chats playlist. My talks, you just go to github.com/KentC.Dodds/talks or talks.KentC.Dodds.com. Or I think talks.kcd.im will take you there also. I also blog on Medium. And so if you go to medium.com/@KentC.Dodds, that's my blog.
Plus the egghead.io.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I'm actually super, super excited about the Contributing to Open Source Libraries series. That's going to be a really good thing for the community, and Egghead is going to make it free because Egghead is awesome and cares about open source. And if you're interested in creating your own library, I already have a series on Egghead about how to create an open source library, and you can find that at kcd.im/write-oss.
Awesome. Well, you're a prolific guy, Kent C. Dodds.
Well, you're nice to say so, Ben Lesh. What's your middle name, Ben?
Harold. It's my grandpa's name.
Ben at H. Lesh. That's good.
I actually like to call him the Ben Lesh.
the Ben Lesh. That's more appropriate.
Yay.
Oh, well, thank you so much again, guys. If you guys want to find Ben on Twitter, he's at Ben Lesh on Twitter, and Kent is at Kent C. Dodds. Also very excited, Kent, to have you being featured on one of the first, actually the first Modern Web online meetup.
I didn't know it was the first one. Wow. I'm nervous now. Even more nervous.
During, you know, I don't know how we're going to do that. Actually, we probably can because it's video. So we'll turn the video on and everybody can do air squats with you first.
So I have given a few remote talks before. So there's a allremoteconferences.com. I gave a talk at the Angular one and the JavaScript one. And I can't get myself to do air squats on a remote conference.
I've literally been air squatting this whole time.
Nice. You have been sounding kind of exhausted, so I thought that was just me.
Well, you know, I'm not a small person, so.
You know, I've been trying to convince Ben to do, I like to do this thing now called lunge dates. So doing lunges, like instead of going to lunch, doing lunges.
Oh,
but,
wow.
Yeah, but I can't seem to convince him to do it with me. But maybe if we get you on like FaceTime or something and then you do them together. I mean, would you be down with that, Ben?
Well,
doing lunges over FaceTime at Netflix with Kent on the other on the
yes.
screen. Is that
yes.
the proposal?
And you said that's instead of lunch. I don't know. I was with you until it was instead of lunch.
Right. Oh no, God. You're like, so you'd be doing it and eating a giant slice of pizza at the same time. Just like interacting every
I'm morning. Earning this pizza.
Well, at least I've convinced Ben to do Jello thumb wrestling. So,
oh man,
I feel like that's I've awesome. Won for the day.
Yeah, well, oh, that's great. My curiosity is if you're going to put like a little beard on Jeff Cross's thumb, like
yes.
So we know who's what.
Well, I was thinking about actually taping like little images of your faces on your thumbs, but. I don't know. I mean, maybe we could like, we're going to have to think about it. We're going to have to brainstorm a little bit.
I think we'll be able to tell them apart anyways, because I bet that Jeff has hairier thumb knuckles than I do.
I'll have to see. He might shave them just for you.
Maybe.
Wow, that's amazing. That his beard is iconic.
It is. You know, he shaved it off before Angular Connect.
Yeah, I know. He looks like a baby.
If these bigger talks, most of my talks are so serious. And I had ahead of time thought of a few gags that were beard centric, and then he shaved it off and
you lost all your ammunition.
I felt impotent after that. I couldn't even bring myself to make a single joke in the whole talk after the beard was shaved. It was like my power comes from his beard. I don't even know how that works.
Thanks for listening. To find more podcasts, videos, and online conferences, check out modern-web.org or find us on Twitter at modernweb_. See you around the internet. Because we got a show for you.